everyone has a role on a film set, whether it's a runner, whether it's you know, a camera person or a sound person. Everyone has their specific roles, and the minute you start trying to be a dictator and intruding on other people's, you have to trust, this is what I'm saying, you have to trust your people, because if you trust your sound person, you're not going to be second guessing them, you're not going to be trying to do their job for them. If they say the sound sounds fantastic, then you trust them. I want to make the best film of all time. So that's always my intention as soon as I start making a film. And I know that to do that is going to be very difficult, maybe impossible. But if I don't try to do that, then for me, just the way I think, I think I'm going to make a really subpar film. I think there's definitely a sense of competition, but not negative competition. I don't see it as I want to destroy this person or destroy this filmmaker or destroy this film. It's not like that. It's more competition of the sense of, I always feel like you raise your game. You always raise your game. I don't know if you know anything about football, but you know, you have Lionel Messi and you have Cristiano Ronaldo, the two best players in the world, and they've driven each other to become the best over the years. And then even with like the 70s, you had Spielberg and Scorsese and Coppola, and they had that friendly competition where they drove each other to pinnacles that, you know, we probably haven't seen since. So I like that sense of competition, that you are trying to not beat necessarily, but trying to improve yourself by watching other people's work, taking on board what they're doing and getting better. There's been many times over the years where I have shied away from being a director, or shied away from writing, or shied away from the responsibility of my following my own dream. Because, you know, in the creative industry, sometimes all you have to keep yourself going is yourself, which, you know, if it's like a car producing fuel for itself, you know, it's that doesn't happen. You need to give it petrol. And the way you can stand out, really, and I know you're probably looking for like a sentence that says how you can stand out, but there is no way you can stand out unless you make something so vastly vulgar that people go, that's disgusting, and then you stand out. Or you make an incredible piece of art that everyone goes, that's amazing, and then you stand out. But to give people advice like that would, you know, how are you going to make the greatest film ever? Like, it's very hard.
Hi, my name is Kofi, and welcome to the VFX Artist Podcast. On today's episode, I have Marcus Flemings, a multi-award winning film director, writer and producer based in the UK. During today's discussion, I'm looking to find out more about Marcus's journey into becoming a film director, writer and producer, as well as to discuss his new film, Blonde Purple, which is due to be out on November 30th. And also, I'm looking to find out more about the challenges that indie filmmakers go through. I hope you enjoyed the show. Welcome to the VFX Artist Podcast. On today's episode, I have Marcus Flemings, who is a UK-based multi, correct me if I'm wrong, but you are a multi-award winning film director, writer and producer. Today I wanted to bring you on to find out a bit more about your journey, in terms of how you started and, yeah, what inspired you to become what you're currently doing. So yeah, it's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Pleasure's all mine, thank you.
Yeah. So yeah, just a quick background information. I think Heather mentioned you to me. He mentioned that you have a film that's coming out at the end of November. And he sent me a link to the trailer, and I was quite impressed by it. I thought it was quite beautifully shot, and I loved the lighting and the direction of the trailer. So yeah, I was quite intrigued, and I wanted to find out more about your journey. So yeah, can you tell us a bit about your background and how you became film director and writer and producer? And
absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, so I was about 16 when I realized I wanted to be a filmmaker. Okay. And at school, they try and force you into, you know, into subjects. They try, when you get to 13, 14, they say you need to pick your three subjects you want to do. And I didn't have a clue what I wanted to do. As a lot of kids wouldn't when they're 13, 14, you know, you're thinking about other things. You're thinking about going home and playing your PlayStation or, you know, your Xbox or whatever. But yeah, so I got to 16, I didn't know what I wanted to be, and I did business studies and didn't really enjoy it. And then I was watching The Godfather one night, and for the first time, and then I realised that I wanted to be a filmmaker, really. So I've been following this path for all my life, and what feels like all my life. And amongst that journey, I've went into finance, did finance for 6 years, and then I started my own kind of a casting company online. And then I started a modeling agency, like a niche modeling agency. And in the background, the filmmaking was always there in my mind. And then I kind of met Haider back in 2005, amongst all of that. And we made short films, and we've always kept in touch and made short films and got closer and closer. And then about 2013, I think it was, he said, let's make a feature film. And I was like, okay, I don't know where we're going to get money to do that, but let me follow you. Because Haider actually been doing a lot of director of photography work for about 3 years prior to that, or maybe 2 years prior to that. He'd done a lot of big English films. So he had the experience, and I really didn't. I was always a script writer, and I wanted to be a director, but I didn't really have the inside knowledge of how the financing and the more kind of behind the scenes technical stuff worked. And he got a grasp of that by being behind the camera and working on so many high end films. So we came together, we made a feature film called The Conversations. He was the lead actor, he was a DOP, he was a joint writer, he was the producer, he got all the money in. And we put a little bit of our own money in as well. But yeah, we managed to make a film for 25,000.
All right.
Which, you know, it's nothing. If you look at like The Eternals, which came out last week, it's 200 million. So I'm assuming that would be a minute of one actor's wage on one day of filming. So 25,000, nothing. We made our first film. We had a massive premiere in Oxford Circus, and all the money went to charity. Again, it was Haider's idea, which was a wonderful, wonderful idea. And then we joint directed that film, and I thought to myself, I really want to make my own film. So then I made a film called Six Rounds in 2016, which was a very artistic film, 57 minutes, about the London riots of 2011. And yeah, I mean, it was well received. It went to the East End Film Festival and got some really good reviews, and it kind of gave me the confidence that I can go on and do this more. It came, I mean, I always had the doubt that I couldn't do it. And then when I made that film, I was like, yeah, I can do this. And then just before lockdown of last year, I made a film called Palindrome, which is where most of my awards came from. I think it's 21 or 23 awards it won. It's a very artistic film. It's not for everyone. But yeah, done really well at festivals, and I managed to get it onto Amazon and to Tubi in America and stuff like that. And then last year during lockdown, everyone was going through different emotions and different feelings and whatnot. And I was really moved by the whole Black Lives Matter and what happened during Black Lives Matter. And, you know, it's something that's always been prevalent in my life, the racism and equality. It's always been something that's kind of struck a chord with me. And then last year it all came to the fore for me. It was like everyone in the world was for this one movement, which, you know, it's taken so long to get to that stage. And it was a very emotional moment, and seeing George Floyd murdered by the police officer as well kind of prompted me into this, making this heist film, which is, it's a heist film and it's a drama film, but there's a lot of political undertones in there, and things that have always been there throughout my whole creative life that all kind of came out in this one film. So yeah, that's where we are now. So made it during lockdown, second lockdown in the UK, and this year managed to secure a distributor in America, which is wonderful. And it's coming out at the end of the month on the 30th of November.
Mm. Oh, yeah, amazing. Incredible journey, yeah. Yeah, so yeah, I saw the trailer. Correct me if I'm pronouncing it wrong. Is it blonde purple or blondie?
Yeah, no, that's it. Blonde purple. Yeah.
So I saw the trailer, and I wasn't sure if it was fully American or it was mixed UK or an American. Are you able to tell us a bit more? Is it filmed in the UK?
It's filmed in wholly filmed in the UK.
Right.
It's meant to be a nondescript location.
Right.
So it's not meant to be UK or America or anywhere, really. It's meant to be just a nondescript location. Mm-hmm. Most of the characters are American. Okay. There's some British characters as well. But the idea is this is taking place in the world, anywhere. The story is universal.
Yeah.
And the reason why they've got American accents to the characters is because, you know, just sounds so cool. So, you know, whenever you switch on a British film, sometimes
it's a bit slow.
Yeah, and you just turn off straight away. And it's a period drama, and they're talking about their emotions and who's going to get married first and stuff like that. And it's, I'm bored of that. Yeah. Either they're talking like that or they're talking with Cockney accents. Mm-hmm. And they are really in a council estate and they're not having a good time. I thought, let me just make something. My last two films were like that. Let me make something that's American.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, sure. Yeah, so yeah, just before we go a bit further, where can people watch the film when it comes out?
It's going to be on Amazon in the UK, US, Australia. Any English-speaking country will have it on Amazon. Mm-hmm. It's also already available for pre-ordering on Apple TV. And it's going to be on Vudu and Xbox as well.
Okay, yeah, sure. All right, wow. Xbox?
Xbox, yeah. I don't know. Yeah, weird. Yeah. I don't know. don't know how, but yeah, it's going to be on Xbox.
Oh, yeah, nice. Cool, yeah. So, yeah, what was the production time? And I mean, was it just a whole year during the pandemic? And, yeah.
Yeah.
How long did,
The production time was, I think we got it done in 21 or 22 days.
Right.
And that wasn't consecutively, that was over the space of maybe a month and a half. Mm-hmm. The locations, all done, because it was quite fortunate because obviously a lot of the places in the UK were shut down during the second lockdown and the first lockdown. So we had a lot of access to a lot of locations that we would normally get access to.
Yeah.
So there's a scene in the diner which was completely empty because, you know, it wasn't being used because all restaurants were shut in the UK. So it's really fortunate we got that. There's another scene in the bar, which again was completely empty and not allowed to use bars during the lockdown. So it was quite fortunate as well. And shooting was kind of smooth, but obviously with COVID around, there's a lot of procedures you need to go through when you're shooting on film. So we had a couple of COVID scares, but it went pretty smoothly otherwise.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. So, yeah, so the aim of the podcast is to educate people that might be looking to getting into an industry that, they haven't been in before, as well as artists or creatives that are currently in the same industry that might be looking up for some inspiration. So just to break it down, I know it might be quite basic in terms of what you do and what you know, but just to break it down for maybe someone that might be looking to get into what you're like becoming someone like you, are you able to break down the process and the stages of bringing a film idea to the end viewer to life?
It feels easier now that I've done it three times. But I guess if you're a first time filmmaker, it's very daunting to think you have to go through various things, like, you know, writing the script's the first thing. You know, if you haven't got a script, don't start shooting. That's my advice. And make sure that you haven't just shown the script to your friends and family, because they're going to say it's good regardless. Make sure you send it to strangers who will be critical of it. Make sure that you're critical of your own script as well. Think to yourself, would I watch this film? If you would watch the film, then definitely shoot it. And then I would say from the script in place, that's 50% of the work done, maybe more than that, because with a good script, you will have a good film, theoretically. You still have to shoot it, and you might ruin it by shooting it, but you theoretically, you've got a good film. So I would say that the key things to keep in mind is your team you're working with. If you're working with a team that you trust and a team that you know can deliver results to you, then you're on your good stead. So make sure the people you're working with believe in your project. Make sure they're not just there to make some money and get out. Make sure they believe in what you're doing. I would also say it's definitely a good idea to know what your budget is. So, you know, have a rough idea of what your budget is. And then once you have a rough idea of your budget, make sure you have a solid idea of your budget. Think about how you're going to make that money. It's very, very key. And I think the good thing is nowadays that you can get a camera, you can hire out a camera, you can buy a camera for quite cheap and shoot a film. You can even shoot a film on your home mobile phone nowadays. You know, my phone is 8K, and you can shoot a film on your mobile if you want to. So I would say those are the key components: script, your team, and what your budget is. If you have those things in place, you are on good tracks to make a good film. Things that happen after that, like casting and, you know, things like hiring crew and doing editing afterwards, they are things you can come to when you come to. But those key things, your team, your script, and your budget are absolutely key.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so, yeah, considering what you do, I was curious, I was wondering what it takes to manage your responsibilities with production crew during the entirety of a project, because you're basically, I mean, I guess everyone's looking up to you for direction, and you're trying to make sure your vision is brought to life so I'm just wondering, how do you manage your responsibilities?
I try and delegate. I think that's one of the things that people lose track of, is that everyone has a role on a film set, whether it's a runner, whether it's a camera person or a sound person. Everyone has their specific roles. And the minute you start trying to be a dictator and intruding on other people's... You have to trust, this is what I'm saying, you have to trust your people. Because if you trust your sound person, you're not going to be second-guessing them. You're not going to be trying to do their job for them. If they say the sound sounds fantastic, then you trust them because you know them, you trust them. Yeah. Same with your camera person. With Haider, because I've worked with him so many times, I will say to him, we have a meeting before the film shoots or even on the same day as a scene, and we'll say, this is what we want to achieve. He'd go off and do that. I'd look at the frame and I'd be like, cool, he knows what he's doing, end of. And when you delegate, you take a lot of weight off your own shoulders, which allows you to be creative in your own role, because being a director is mostly being creative. Obviously, it's also organizing everything that's going on around you, but the creativity is the thing you need to keep key, because if you can keep the script exactly as how you want it, then you will produce a good film, or you will maybe produce a good film, but if your script's good, but you'll definitely get across what you wanted to achieve in the first place. So I would say delegate. That's the most important thing I've learned throughout my film making career, is that if you delegate to the right people doing the right things, the results will be as good as you want them to be.
I was gonna ask you how you gauge the integrity of a project, in terms of whether the actors or your vision is being delivered exactly to how you envision. But I guess you've touched on that, I guess. So I'm curious about how connected, like, you or I don't know, an indie film maker needs to be when it comes to attaining a budget for a film, as well as during the distribution part of it, when the film is done.
So how is your question, how would you attain the budget, or how
how important is connection, how important is
it's very important. It's very important. It's extremely important. I would say that having good connections will definitely help you. Thankfully, on these films, I've almost self-financed the past two, so it's been quite fortunate in that sense. But definitely having good connections will help you sometimes. I think on the first film we made, me and Haider had a lot of wonderful connections with, I think, 3 or 4 investors, which they all put money into the film, which really helps. And Haider's really good at kind of, and you know, you've met him, so you've spoken to him, so you know he's very personable, and you know he's very passionate about film, and that comes across as soon as you meet him, that comes across, and that's how he's managed to get people on his side over the years. And I think it's really important to keep those key relationships going, because, you know, they may not invest the first time, they may not invest the second time, but somewhere down the line they may invest, or they may just pay to watch your film. You know, if they like you, they may pay to watch your film, which is an investment in itself. So keeping key relationships is really, really important. And it's good to keep those relationships going. So if you do work with an investor, make sure they get their money back before you start going out and spending your money.
Right.
Make sure they get all their money back. We did that with Conversations. You know, we made a little bit of money from the film and we just gave it straight back. Any money that we've made, we've given it straight back to the investors. With distributors and sales agents and stuff, that is, again, keeping relationships. But you have to keep in mind that, you know, for this film, I've now established a relationship with one distributor. On the next film I make, maybe it's with another distributor. So, you know, it really varies. But you should always keep relationships in the industry really tight, because it's a very small industry and people think it's this vast, wide thing. There's different levels, you know. There's the Hollywood level, and there's the independent budget level, and there's a low, really low end. And everyone knows each other. Until you get to the Hollywood stage, everyone knows each other. So, you know, if you mess someone over, if you're not delivering, if you're rude to someone, someone's going to find out somewhere. So keeping relationships is really key. And just, you know, I think you mentioned the word vision, making sure that your vision is always communicated to everyone that you work with, whether it's through the final product of the film, whether it's for your verbal conversations, or just, you know, just being on set and showing the right attitude. Having that vision is key.
Yeah, yes. So at a time where there's a lot of content being churned out for, I don't know, streaming companies like Netflix and Amazon and whatnot, how are indie filmmakers surviving or competing with so-called competition these days?
Oh, good question. See, it's a bit of a... it's a bit of a double-edged sword with these streaming services, because they are really good for independent filmmakers like myself. You know, it's really opened up the door for a lot of low-end films, which is fantastic. But the other side of things, there's still the gate. You know, there's still a gatekeeper. There's still gatekeepers in the way who... what I just mentioned it a minute ago about the high-end Hollywood budget level of filmmaking, there's still the gatekeepers who will stop you from getting to that level. You need to keep jumping to get to that level. I think what Netflix and more so Amazon, and there's a couple of really good websites like Film Hub, and there's another one called Indie Rights that are really good at really helping filmmakers, independent filmmakers, get their films to digital platforms, which means that you can go out and make a film now, like I said, on your phone, make sure it's very good, get it onto a platform, people can watch it, they can pay for it and see it, which is great. The only other side of that would be now someone with their phone can go and make a film and it can be really bad and they can flood the market with really bad films. So your film gets grouped in with really bad films, and in a way, as a consumer, when you go to Amazon or Netflix, I guess what you're looking for is the first A-list star. You know, you want to watch the film with Brad Pitt, you don't want to watch the film with Joe Bloggs down the road. So there's still the gates that you need to kind of open up, but I feel like definitely from when I was growing up and I wanted to be a filmmaker, and I thought it was absolutely impossible because you need millions of pounds, to where things are now, where, you know, you can shoot a film during lockdown for 21 days and get it sold around the world. Things are definitely a lot better for a filmmaker. And I would say, as an aspiring filmmaker, go out there and do it. Make a film. Like, there's nothing stopping you now. There's literally nothing stopping you. You do it with your phone. You can edit on your laptop. You can edit online on Google. And you can put it, you can send it out. You can put it on YouTube even. You know, there's nothing stopping you. And the more films you shoot, the more times you get in front of, behind the camera, the better you're going to be.
Oh, yeah, sure, yeah.
Does that answer the question?
It does, yeah. Okay. It does. Okay. It does. So, yeah, I'm trying to pick up on your thought process. So what's the end goal or your desire for you as a creative or filmmaker during the idea conceptualization and after the film has been made.
I mean, what I'm trying to do when I make any creative product is make the best thing that anyone's ever seen. And obviously that's a really high expectation to put on yourself. And I'm very sure I haven't done that yet. But for me, on a personal level, I want to make the best thing anyone's ever seen. I'm very elitist when it comes to film. So, you know, I look at the IMDb top 250 and I go, have I seen all those films? Which films really appeal to me? This is my favorite film. That's the best film of all time. This film gets a 9. This film gets an 8. So I'm very much like, I want to make the best film of all time. So that's always my intention as soon as I start making a film. And I know that to do that is going to be very difficult, maybe impossible. But if I don't try to do that, then for me, just the way I think, I think I'm going to make a really subpar film. So my intentions always from the beginning of the conception of a film to the end of a film is always try and make the best film I can make. But on top of that, I guess also I'm trying to get across the message of my films, because I always try and make sure that I put something personal into my films that affects me as an individual. And like I said to you initially, with Blonde Purple, last year's shenanigans, murderings and shenanigans and protests affected me quite deeply. And, you know, the riots back in 2011 affected me quite deeply. And my films, as I said initially, have all been to do with either politics or mainly racial affairs. And I feel like I want people to watch the film and resonate with the message that I'm trying to get across, and feel like there is something deeper going on rather than people just, you know, sitting around a dinner table talking about what food they're going to eat. I like people to have come out of the film and think to themselves, oh, that meant this or that meant this.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So do you think you prioritize story over visuals, or do you try to have them be both as strong?
I would say it's a good question. I would say I always try and prioritize story.
Right.
That's always my intention. I always try and make sure with my visuals, they don't overpower the story, or that they complement the story. A lot of filmmakers are different. You know, if you watch a Michael Bay film and he's blowing stuff up and it looks really good, but the storyline's toilet, then then you're watching something completely different to what I'd be doing. I'm trying to make sure my shots and my storyboards and so forth are always pushing forward the narrative. Mm-hmm. I feel that's more important. Having said that, this, like, I watched Dune recently. I don't know if you saw Dune. Yeah. And that is, it's a visually spectacular film. And the story is good, but I would feel, I felt like the visuals were way more impactful. I left the film thinking, I love that shot, and I love that shot, and I love that shot. And I wasn't thinking about the story, I was thinking about the shot. So in both instances, for me, they both work. But for me personally, I really like using shots that motivate the audience's perception of what's happening.
Yeah. Dune is one that I really want to watch, just based on seeing the trailer. It looks like you said, the visuals look amazing, and
they are.
It's drawn me to want to see it. I'm just I'm just trying to find out in terms of how you approach, I don't know, like how you compare content that's already out there. Do you think you are competitive in terms of, like, do you feel that other people's projects are competing with you, or do you not think in a way that you literally just want to create what you want to create, and you don't want to be affected by, you don't have any competition with anyone?
Yeah, it's a good question again. I think there's definitely a sense of competition, but not negative competition. I don't see it as I want to destroy this person or destroy this filmmaker or destroy this film. It's not like that. It's more competition of the sense of, I always feel like you raise your game. You always raise your game. I don't know if you know anything about football, but you know, you have Lionel Messi and you have Cristiano Ronaldo, the two best players in the world, and they've driven each other to become the best over the years. And then even with like the 70s, you had Spielberg and Scorsese and Coppola, and they had that friendly competition where they drove each other to pinnacles that, you know, we probably haven't seen since. So I like that sense of competition, that you are trying to not beat necessarily, but trying to improve yourself by watching other people's work, taking on board what they're doing and getting better. But I don't see myself in direct competition with anyone in that sense. And I try and draw on inspiration rather than being negative towards it. So I wouldn't look at someone's work and go, that's terrible, I'm not going to do that. I'd be more like, that's amazing, that's incredible, that inspires me to try and do something equally as good as well. So that's why, as I mentioned before, my favorite films, or you know, films from the 40s and the 70s and the 90s, and I try and make sure that those levels of films that I've seen that I really admire, I'm competing with those films. If anything, I'm competing with those films.
So touching on that, I'm just wondering, in that instance, then what do you do to stand out from the crowd? And I've got two questions. So,
sure.
What do you do to stand out from the crowd? And also, how do you make sure inspiration doesn't affect your creative output in terms of originality? So, how does inspiration not affect what you output, but make your ideas be original or somehow?
Oh, good question again. Very good questions. I like these questions. Okay, so you had two questions there. The first question was that about...
Yeah, how do you make sure you stand out based on the competition around you?
I think standing out... I think if you're true to yourself, you'll stand out. I think everyone's got their own experiences. Everyone's got their own interpretations of... Like, if we saw the same... If me and you saw the same thing, we would have two different interpretations of what that thing was. So I think as long as you're individual and you stay true to your vision, you'll always stand out. You may not stand out to a popular crowd, but you will stand out to people. So I don't worry too much about that so much. The second question is a great question, because I feel like, you know, I've seen a lot of films in my life, and watching a film to me is like homework. It's not actually enjoyable anymore, because I'm analysing every little thing. And with Blonde Purple, there's a lot, people watch it and think, oh, that's from that film and that's from that film, because quite frankly I was doing that on purpose in Blonde Purple. There's a lot of Spike Lee and Tarantino and 90s, and there's a lot of references to those films. So ordinarily I would try and be as original as possible. And I think there's no instance where a filmmaker hasn't copied subconsciously or mirrored something that's happened before. Maybe consciously they've mirrored things that happened before. Spike Lee's done it, Tarantino's done it, Scorsese's done it. All the massive filmmakers have all kind of riffed on things they've seen previously. And deep down inside, everyone's seen an art piece or a photo that they have taken inspiration from, and subconsciously it's laser beamed into their mind, and you just can't get away from it. It shapes who you are. Every frame that you paint, every word that you write is influenced by something. So I try not to worry about that too much. I do worry when it comes to plagiarism, because that's just plagiarism. But if you know what you're doing, you're conscious of it, or you're completely subconscious of it and you do something completely different to what's been done before, then you know that doesn't bother me at all.
So there are a vast amount of filmmakers and creatives, so I'm just wondering what does one need to do to catch a break in terms of, I don't know, being recognized or coming into the limelight based on what they do?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, that is a tricky one. That is a very tricky one because I think some people think it's down to luck. I don't think it is. I think it's down to perseverance. I think how you stand out from the crowd is quite literally perseverance. Yeah. And there's been many times over the years where I have shied away from being a director, or shied away from writing, or shied away from the responsibility of my following my own dream. Because, you know, in the creative industry, sometimes all you have to keep yourself going is yourself, which, you know, if it's like a car producing fuel for itself, you know, it's that doesn't happen. You need to give it petrol. And the way you can stand out, really, I know you're probably looking for like a sentence that says how you can stand out, but there is no way you can stand out unless you make something so vastly vulgar that people go, that's disgusting, and then you stand out. Or you make an incredible piece of art that everyone goes, that's amazing, and then you stand out. But to give people advice like that would, you know, how are you going to make the greatest film ever? Like, it's very hard. And if you want to make something vulgar, well, great, but a lot of people make vulgar things. So how are you going to stand out from that? I would say just be persistent. Just be really persistent. The only way you're going to get better as a filmmaker, as any creative, is by making mistakes. So keep making mistakes. Keep on making mistakes. But when you make the mistakes, learn from them, get better, move forwards. Because I've made a lot of crap over the years. And I've gone back and I've watched the crap I've made, and I've gone, I'm not going to do that again. So I would say the best way to stand out is just being persistent. Keep going. Absolutely keep going. If you've made 3 films already, made 4 films already, you still haven't got to where you're going to go, keep going. Keep going. It literally is the only tried and tested method to stand out, for me anyway.
Oh yeah, sure. Big question. So how do you deal with your ego when it comes to accepting or receiving constructive feedback or criticism?
It hurts. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it hurts everyone, you know, when you get criticism. It hurts you a lot, and especially if you put a lot of your personal feelings and thoughts into a film, or anything that you've created, to receive criticism is really hard. Sometimes it can help. Sometimes, like, the thing that can help is if you receive a lot of positive notes on your film from strangers, and then another stranger comes along and says it's terrible, you can kind of balance off the positivity with negativity. Yeah. But I don't know. I mean, on social media, I think one of the key things is, like, you could post a picture, you can get 1,000 likes, and you can get one comment saying, you know what, that's awful, you look ugly. And then you will always take that one comment, and it will become 2,000 hates in your head. And those 1,000 likes you got won't mean anything. So criticism will always hit you hard. It's really nothing you can do. But it comes back to what I said a minute ago, which is perseverance. And if you truly believe in yourself and your vision, getting a negative feedback, sometimes it's fair. Sometimes you receive criticism on the film or piece of art or work that is fair, and you have to take it on board and try and improve. And sometimes it's not fair. Sometimes that one person's opinion doesn't match what 20 other people think. You just need to kind of be harsh on yourself, I feel, as well. You need to know that you're never going to be perfect. You know, whatever you do is never going to be perfect. And as long as you know that, then you'll be fine. As long as you know that you always have to improve, you'll be fine. And as long as you know that, just because, say, for example, I made this film, it didn't sell, got loads of bad criticism, I would then have to try and console myself by myself and just go and do something better. That's the only solution, really. It's just learning and moving forwards.
Oh yeah, sure, yeah. Yeah. So I was speaking to a guy called Floyd Billinger in one of my episodes, and we were discussing the lack of or the seemingly lack of black people in the visual effects industry, or as well as the gaming industry. So I'm just wondering, how you kept going from having had set your mind to become a filmmaker, and maybe not necessarily receiving the support or the audience in our background, for example. I'm just wondering how you kept yourself going and just kept on pursuing and just looking at the light towards the tunnel.
Do you mean that from the perspective of being as black? Okay, so I think from a young age I haven't let that get to me. I know I've been through various types of racism, that's quite a broad word. Let's just call it prejudice, a lot of prejudice. You initially, and I think you know this as well, you know, whenever you do anything, you're always doubting, are they going to think this because I'm black? You always think that. So you go for a job interview, you don't get it, you think, oh, didn't I get it because I'm black? And then you go, you know, you ask a girl out, oh, didn't she like me because I'm black? And it's, everything is because of this thing that you cannot change. So I've always had that idea that I just don't care, you know, if there's a wall over there, I'm going to knock it down. And that's just how I've always been, you know. If there's a wall to jump over, I'm not going to jump over it, I'm going to knock it down. So I think in terms of this industry and how tough it is, I think not just in the VFX field, I feel like in general there's a lack of black people, unless it's actors. I think there's a lot of actors, which is really good. I think that's really changing. But I think behind the camera, if you go on a film set, everyone is majority case not black, and majority case men. So there's a lot of work to be done there. Mm-hmm. And I feel like you just have to have the mentality of knocking down the wall. You really do. You need to have that. If they want me to jump over the wall, that's fine, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to knock down the wall. Really going to knock down the wall. Keep going. Mm-hmm. Keep smashing your head against the wall until that wall knocks down. And it's going to hurt you, but you have to keep going. I think that's one of the things that I've said so many times now, is that you just keep going until they accept who you are. Just keep on going. Mm-hmm. I started as I said before, modeling agency. Mm-hmm. And the first agency I started was a niche agency for South Asian models. I saw there wasn't enough of them in the fashion industry. So I did that for about 7 years. And then my most recent agency is called BAME Agency, which is basically, I don't like the term BAME. And I decided to use that word against itself. So all our talent are white, black, everything. So I've just taken the word and just turned it on its head, basically. And it's the same principle here. It's just keep bashing your head against the wall and it will fall down. And don't give up. And don't feel like because you're a woman or because you're black that you can't knock down that wall. You can knock down that wall. Yeah. And it sounds quite rebellious, but you know, if they're not opening the door, then you knock down the wall, basically.
Sure, yeah, it's great. So what's your vision or your dream for the future as a film director, producer and writer?
Good question again. I think really just to keep on being able to express myself through film. I think, as I said before, I want to make the best film ever made. So to do that, I'm going to need a lot of tries to get better and better. So I just want to keep on making film after film after film. And I want to be able to work with people who I like and people who, and meet people that, you know, resonate in my world. So that's really my immediate and long-term goal, is to keep on making films, keep on writing, keep on expressing myself through my art. And I'm hoping one day that I get rewarded for my hard work. And I can look back on this podcast that I've did and just kind of celebrate the fact that I've achieved what I wanted to.
Yeah, of course, yeah. Yeah, to sum it up, I just thought, are you able to, what advice would you give to any prospective filmmakers looking to get into
that film. Field.
Yeah.
Into film. I'm going to say something different. I'm going to say be persistent, because I'm probably bored of hearing that. I would definitely not rely on others. Don't rely on others. Don't rely on others at all. Don't think you need to go to film schools and do things like that. If it helps you, if it gives you the confidence, do it. But I didn't go to film school. I just learned by watching films and reading books and watching the DVD commentaries on films and stuff like that, and just keep doing. Like, if you want to get into film, start doing it. It's one of those fields where you can be theoretical, absolutely, but unless you get your hands dirty, and if you want to be a writer, unless you stop writing, or if you want to be a director, unless you pick up a camera and start directing, you're not going to make it. So I would say, if you're young and aspiring, straight away from today, like, whatever field it is you want to get into, start practically getting involved in it. If you want to be a costume person, start getting involved in fashion. If you want to be a sound person, start recording sound. Like, get on it straight away, start practicing, start making mistakes, and start learning from your mistakes.
That's really good advice. Where can people find your work and your past projects and upcoming projects?
They can find me on Twitter at Marcus Flemings, and I'm sure my name will be so they can find me on there. They can find me on Instagram as well. It's Marcus Flemings again, with double S. And they can find, if you go to those social media, you'll find my films, but you can also go on Amazon and you will find Palindrome, my second film. You'll find my first film, Six Rounds. And then from the 30th of November, you'll find my most recent film, Blonde Purple. And if you wanna get involved in modeling, then you can go to my company, BAME Agency, which is on Instagram and also has a website as well. So,
amazing. Amazing. Yeah.
Can I ask you a question before,
yeah,
before we go?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So what are you, because your podcast is called VFX Artist Podcast, are you involved in VFX?
Yeah, so I'm a match move artist, which is, I don't know if you're aware, so my job is essentially picking the footage and recreating the camera, the movement of the camera on set, so that we can integrate the CGI.
Nice.
So I do a lot of camera recreations, as well as rebuild the movements of actors and objects, so that we can, like, say for example, I don't know, an actor has a green screen on their arm and they need to replace it. So it's my job to get the movement exactly as it happened on set and then replace it. So
it's pretty cool.
A lot of camera stuff.
Have you worked on anything big?
A few. So the last film that I worked on was Marvel Eternals. I work predominantly in film. So basically I did a computer animation course, and then I graduated in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been in industry since 2011.
Wow.
So I've worked on
A
few films that you might be aware of.
Definitely. Yeah. You can give people more advice than I can. You've done more than me, so...
That's
impressive.
I'm always looking to meet new people and learn about new things that I don't personally do.
Yeah.
And what you do was quite intriguing, and I just wanted to highlight what you do, so...
No, I think you guys... I've done some VFX on this last film... And you guys are just incredible. You know, you do things that I'm like, wow. You literally make the film. That's what you literally, especially when it comes to something like Internals, that is probably 70% VFX.
Yeah.
It's incredible how far things have moved just in the past 10 years even.
Yeah.
So well done to you.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much. Yeah. Thank you. But thank you for your time and for coming on. And I hope people enjoy listening and watching to this episode and also going on and watching your shows that you've produced.
So, Thank you for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
That is great.
And hopefully we'll speak soon.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
All right. Have a lovely one. Make sure you watch the film as well.
31st November. Of course. Yeah. Yeah, of course. Definitely.